This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hey there, it's H. Allen, not Prince Sullivan, even though some of you think our voices sound so similar. I still am very confused by that. And it's the last week of June, which means it's the end of Pride Month. And as you know, we have been all month been celebrating Pride with our sponsor, Can. Can is reshaping social drinking with their range of microdose non-alcoholic beverages that deliver literally the perfect uplifting feeling every single time you get it. It's cannabis-infused social tonic, and it's just, you feel it just enough to make you go, yeah, you know what? I think I'll go to Pride today. And by celebrating this month with Can, we've been featuring some of our chats with our guests about what they think about cannabis, what they love about cannabis, their favorite things to eat while maybe enjoying a little Can beverage. And we're speaking with our guest today. So you're getting a little bit of our guest before we actually talk to our guest. Bridger Weiniger, he is host of I Said No Gifts, a fantastic podcast. And we talked to Bridger a little bit about cannabis and all those things. And then stay tuned for the rest of the episode today because we're speaking with Bridger about the podcast I Said No Gifts. And I think I'm going to mail him a gift. I think that's what I'm going to do. Yeah. But guys, hope you had a great Pride Month. And here's a little chat with Bridger.
So as everyone knows, our sponsor is Can, the delicious cannabis-infused beverage. And it's Pride Month, and we're here with Bridger Weiniger talking about Pride, but also just cannabis and Can and all the fun things that we love about Pride that makes us go, woo, I wish I had another Can. How's your Pride? How's your Pride going, Bridger?
It's been incredible. Yeah. We're halfway through June here. I've done absolutely nothing.
Yeah, right. That's where I thought your answer was going to be, but I was like, oh,
the are you I'm as like, exhausted
was he,
by
like, dancing in
are?
The streets?
There's not a lot there for me socially or parades, anything like this, parties. Yeah. Really doesn't speak to what I like to do as a person. So, right. But I'm looking at the Instagram. I'm seeing other people having a wonderful time.
Right.
I'm hitting the like button on those posts.
Right.
And who could ask for more?
right.
You just described my June. Described June to me.
Elliot's a little bit more dour about it. Sorry, Alan, go ahead.
I do want to ask, because you host the great podcast, I Said No Gifts, I have personally received some pretty dreadful Pride-related gifts and products over the years that have made me go, like, I once got a cock ring that was a rainbow as a gift goodie bag thing, and it was absurd because I've had testicular cancer and that's not going to fit around my one ball. So I wanted to know, like, what kind of ridiculously queer related gifts have you received over the years?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I feel like the gay community is ready to launch me into the ocean. They have no interest in it. The gay community wants nothing to do with Bridger. No gay gifts, no gay parties, nothing.
No parades, no floats with your face on it.
I mean, I have this People magazine with the Jonas Brothers. You could just jerk off to this, and that's kind of
good.
There
we go. See,
there you go.
Yeah, even as much as a copy of People magazine.
People right? magazine.
I still get it. I'm a subscriber, people. Thank you. I'm such like a 58-year-old woman who's just like you sitting here really being are. Like, the kids are gone. I'm going to read my People magazine. Let's see what Star Treks are up to.
Sifting through. Yes. Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome to You're Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
So how does it feel to have less rights? Because that's what we have now after the Supreme Court's expected...
Definitely a bummer week.
Expected decision on Roe v. Wade and the overturning of Roe v. Wade and some of the... Which immediately triggered trigger laws, which then effectively bans abortion in a number of states. I think the first one to do it is my home state of Missouri. I feel so proud.
Feels great. It was definitely obviously it was a really disturbing weekend, and I guess I felt kind of strongly. I wanted to say this because I feel like as a gay man, when I look back on all the gay pride events that I went to over the last, 15 years, begrudgingly, typically, but every time I went, it was all gay men and women. Those are the only people that were at gay pride events. Of course, some straight people too, but you get it. That like gay pride is about, is a lot of gay men and gay women and straight women. And so I almost feel, I mean, not only my pro-choice to begin with, but I really do feel it's like our duty to support women right now and do everything we can to advocate for their rights as well. Cause I feel like they stood with us for so long during our, our march to freedom. And, and I
not
just,
even our march to freedom, but the whole AIDS epidemic as well.
But I also think it's a moment that we shouldn't be necessarily hand-wringing about what's going to happen with gay marriage or other Supreme Court decisions down the road, which I think
but there is concern there because of what Clarence Thomas did. I mean, Clarence Thomas didn't need to do what he did, and he intentionally suggested in that other laws that are past Supreme Court precedents, like Lawrence or like, marriage equality, these different laws could then now be revisited. He didn't have to write that. He didn't have to say that in his decision, and he did because he is America's boogeyman.
Well, I mean, Clarence Thomas is an absolute psycho, but I do think it's important to note that, justices can join concurrences. So what Clarence Thomas did was he wrote what's called a concurrence, which is saying he agreed with the majority opinion striking down Roe versus Wade, but then he decided to write his own opinion saying
He rarely does. And one of the reasons why he did that was to send marginalized communities into a panic over the possibility of further rights being taken away. That's why he did that.
Not interracial couples, though. Not interracial.
No. And the other thing, too, is, I hate to admit it, but like I feel it's definitely conspiratorial, I will say. But like Clarence Thomas and his wife, they had Trump's ear. Look at what Trump was able to do with the Supreme Court. Look at what the nominees that he got on the Supreme Court. How much of that is Clarence Thomas's sort of now? Clarence Thomas is now Chief Justice, essentially.
And Ginny's like just as guilty by association, and yet there's like no rules, I guess, that prohibit a Supreme Court justice's partner from.
There's no rule.
Being involved, right. No,
very few rules for
elections,
spouses,
right?
Yeah, there's very few spouses.
Very few rules for them in general. But anyway, I
think that my knee-jerk reaction was I was personally just turned off by the immediate reaction that was, especially in like headlines. what does this mean for gay people? What does it mean for gay guys? And I was just like, not now, guys, not now. It's not the day. Like, this is a time to focus on women. And also because marriage is not the same thing as a woman's autonomy and her body, it's not the same thing. And obviously it's something to worry about, but this is a time to like really focus on what this means for women and how.
But it's also, it's not just about women, which is, many, many, many leading sort of like abortion rights activists organizations or abortion organizations are saying abortion is not a woman's issue. It is a healthcare issue that impacts all Americans, male and female, and everybody else on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And it impacts families. Yeah. It impacts particularly families on the lower socioeconomic level.
Right.
And it is going to, the ramifications of this decision in states like Arkansas, Missouri, Georgia, all these states where now families are going to have to then be further in debt because they can't access a safe and legal abortion. They can't access health care in a way that will then help them prosper as society members economically. And we are it is a further attempt to push marginalized, primarily POC people in this country into further debt and push them back out of society. Basically, there's a level of racism involved in it. It's really disgusting what's happening.
I mean, of course, there's a level of race. Everyone knows, you know, if you told me that the daughter of the most conservative Texas Republican in the state house of Texas flew to New York to get an abortion, there isn't a soul in America that would be surprised to hear that. Everyone knows if you're rich, you do whatever you want. And everyone knows if you're rich, and you're a person in power, you kind of get to make the rules, and you can be as hypocritical as you want. So inherently, this is a racist or perhaps racist and classist decision.
Bigoted.
I mean, it really is profoundly embarrassing.
On the international stage, it's so embarrassing.
I couldn't agree more. It's so disappointing. But I will say this. I will strike, I guess, a bit of an optimistic note, which is I think there is a part of me that thinks this will not happen in all states by any means. But there's a part of me that thinks in a lot of states like so the point I'm making is in a lot of states like my home state of Michigan, where abortion it's kind of in a gray area at the moment. I unequivocally believe that if you put a state constitutional amendment on the ballot, which is to say, if you gave the vote to the people and said, do you, every voter, believe that abortion should be legal in the state of Michigan, I believe it would pass unequivocally in a majority of moderate and even, I think, swing, if even slightly conservative states. And I think that would be an infinitely more sustainable and irreversible solution to creating abortion rights for women in those states. Obviously, that isn't nationwide, and that means there's a lot of women in a lot of conservative states are going to be left out of that. But my first thought was my friends in Michigan and thinking, how quickly can we get a ballot initiative on the ballot for the midterms that will legalize abortion? And they cannot and will not overturn that.
Well, that's
that's my
that
hope.
Called? And is there a term for that in like the legal realm that I'm just curious, because I know there was when like Coney Barrett and there is a term that the justices, when they're being questioned, there's a term that they used in reference to abortion in Roe versus Wade that was sort of a way to sidestep talk.
Privacy?
Yes. And
they would say established precedent. They would say that, I don't know the Latin term. But they would.
Yeah, I think I heard.
Stare decisis.
But yeah. That's it.
But the thing is, that's a great point, Brent, but that also is part of the problem. With you can't having a state by state decision on healthcare, on how people can access healthcare, is fundamentally a constitutional crisis, because you set up a system in which some people in this state have certain rights that then other people in this state who want those rights don't have that, and then they have to do interstate commerce. Again, this makes it a federal issue, interstate commerce to get to that state, but a lot of them can't. And so it's like, sure. You know, in St. Louis, I know people can go across the border into Illinois very easily and get an abortion. Someone in Kansas City can't. They're stuck. They're landlocked in figuring out what to do with this pregnancy. And that is now, because of the 22 states that either have trigger laws or are establishing them right now in banning abortion, those people will be stuck. And that's almost half the country. Like,
it leaves a lot of women. Even I think the most optimistic scenario still leaves, you know, 10, 12 states that under no circumstances would legalize abortion. And it's just fundamentally wrong. But the problem is that's where we are. That's the travesty of this decision.
We're there because people, in my opinion, I think you're talking about voting. People should now, voting is more important than ever in making sure that in these states there's
less of a majority of one party that then gets to make all of the decisions. And you have a fighting chance then to establish abortion as a legal right, as for health care in states, added to the constitutions of these states, if these states have a fair and balanced electorate, meaning that there's some debate in the houses and the senates of these state parties.
And local politics is more important than ever. I've never been a big one on local politics. I've never given a fuck. It always flies under my radar. And now I'm realizing, obviously, if we're talking states' rights, you know, voting for your state senator, your state representative is more important than ever. So,
there's
a website that I just posted in conjunction with this week called shoutyourabortion.com. And it gives people information that they need to know about abortion pills and also ways to access abortion when it's not available in their state. So shoutyourabortion.com is certainly one resource to use, but obviously there's a plethora at this point, but you know, the fight is real. The fight is on. I think I said to Brent, like, this feels similar to the protests have felt similar to the Women's March, not just because it's women, but just because it felt so immediate and such a swift reaction. And so, you know, there's no silver lining, but at least, you know, it's made aware that it's been made clear that people do not agree with this on the whole and that it doesn't represent most of America.
The numbers, I think, are unequivocally on our side. There are a lot of Republicans who are pro-choice, and there's some Democrats who are pro-life, and there's a lot of independents who are pro-choice. The numbers are on our side. That's why I'm, you know, anyway, it's extraordinarily frustrating, but you know,
it's just frustrating.
The
same time,
the war isn't over. This is just one battle.
That this is a result of one person being elected president. That's literally why we're here. We're here because Hillary Clinton lost the election. And that is so frustrating. It's so frustrating.
Yeah. A hot dog man game show host literally ruined America.
I don't know. Did I ever tell you guys when I was in college, I used to fuck with conservative right wing organizations? Did I ever tell you that?
No.
Remember, like Concerned Women for America and American Family Association were like super anti-gay in like the early aughts when I was in college. So I would call them to make a donation. And so I would, you know, I would ask to speak to the person on the donation line. And, you know, it's a fairly lengthy process, giving your credit card number and all these things.
Yeah.
So I would go through the whole process, give them all my information and say, how much would you like to donate? And I would say $100 million. And then they would just like hang up on me. But I was like, hey, if I can waste 2 minutes of their time, that's a victory, right?
I used to sign people up for Republican email letters that I didn't. Like when I got their emails, I would just sign them up for newsletters.
I thought when you went on a bad date, you would sign somebody up for like a wedding.
No, the magazine.
Magazines, which is insane because that's cost them money.
Yeah.
Alan, I'm calling the police.
Not even joking.
We are joined today by a very funny person, Bridger Weiniger. I almost wanted to say Bridget, and you're not a Bridget at all. You're a Bridger. Right. You're a Bridger. But when I say Bridger, I want to say Bridget. How are you, Bridger?
I'm good. And so many people want to say Bridget.
But you're not a Bridget. You don't even emote a Bridget vibe. But yet
the phone puts Bridget. Does it? You know, telemarketers do Bridget. No one can get on board with the R instead of the T.
Where'd you get that name? Where does it? What kind of name is that?
There was a mountain man named Jim Bridger. Who, as far as I know,
you mean Jim Bridget, right?
as far as I know, and I should look into this because I've repeated the story enough that I'm really spreading a lie. But I think he's like the first white person to discover the Great Salt Lake, and it was by mistake. He like thought it was the Pacific Ocean, which is just actually humiliating.
So. Oh my god! Yeah. Oh wow! Where our names come from? Always uncomfortable stories, really.
Go ahead, Alan.
I just want to tell everyone, just so that we know,
yes,
you host a fantastic podcast called I Said No Gifts. We haven't brought you a gift today other than our beautiful, beautiful chicken cutlet faces. Yes.
Yes.
My boyfriend says that my skin looks like a chicken cutlet. Every white person's skin, he's not white, looks like a chicken cutlet. So I now have just started referring to
a beautiful chicken cutlet.
Well, thank you.
We're just shimmering.
But your podcast is so funny. How did it? I mean, do you really hate gifts?
I think maybe I'm speaking for too many people, but it's an uncomfortable thing to get. Like at a birthday party, if someone hands me a gift, I never know if I should open it in front of them.
Sure.
Or if I should put it aside, which is also weird. I don't know. I'm just not good at receiving things.
Cast it aside.
What makes it awkward? I mean, sure, in that situation, like in a party situation, receiving a gift, it's weird because you don't know when to open stuff. But like if someone, like if I came over to your house and I brought some wine and maybe some cheese or something, would that be uncomfortable?
It would be. I mean, I would feel like you went out of your way. I don't like the idea of someone going out of their way for me.
Oh,
no.
I get that. I like making a big deal out of other people. I like making a big deal out of other people's birthdays. I do not like people making a big deal out of my birthday.
But I don't associate birthdays with gifts. I have a birthday coming up and I don't want people to celebrate my birthday, but I do want gifts. Like I love a gift. Love a gift. I think a gift is fantastic.
Well, of course, receiving something for free, an object that might improve your life on paper sounds fantastic.
I still have the same reaction as a 28 year old something as I did when I was a kid, which is when I see the UPS truck pull up to my building, my thought is someone has sent me a present.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought as a kid, you know, like around your birthday, like if you saw the UPS truck, you're like, okay, someone has sent me a present. And that was such a big deal. And then to this day, no one has sent me anything in 25 years.
Wait, you get care packages?
My mom sends me actually a lot of care packages. Alan actually sends me money sometimes, which is very fun. Because in Vegas, Alan sent me like $40. And I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. And it was like, it was like the best part of Vegas for me. But anyway.
I love giving gifts. I will admit that fully. I mean, I feel like I should put that out there. I love giving gifts. I give
just random occasions.
Oh, random, all the time. Like I will randomly, if I see something and I'm thinking of someone, I will get it for them. I feel like in a weird way, I'm not saying I have a lot of money, but there is sort of a thing where like, I feel like, oh, well, this isn't going to hurt me this month. This is something that's going to make someone else happy. So I send it and it's like, it's, I don't know. I love it.
Sounds like you have a lot of money. Yeah.
Well, so what's the premise of the podcast?
The podcast is just the guest shows up with a gift. Every week somebody brings me something and it's wrapped. And so about halfway through the podcast, I open it up and we talk about whatever's happening. So it has actually become a problem in my life. We've done, I don't know, like 115 episodes. So I've got just dozens of items that actually haven't improved my life in any way. They're just piling up. Oh. There maybe like 10 of the things have been useful.
See, now I want to
come on useful.
I want to come on your podcast and give you something useful now.
Yeah, what's been really useful?
I got a car garbage can.
Oh,
which
very useful.
Truly has changed everything for me. Yeah. It's amazing.
They probably bought it at Daiso. That's where I bought mine.
Oh, that seems like the perfect place to get a car garbage can. Yeah. But, you know, straw wrappers, receipts, they used to just be all over the floor. Yeah. Right. Now it's just the stretch back. We're filling that up. Right. It feels incredible. Right.
I got angry at my boyfriend the other day for throwing something on the ground, being like, we have a car garbage can. I was so angry.
The car garbage can is never without, I mean, it's always within reach. So your boyfriend's out of control.
I know, he's unhinged. He's unhinged.
Yeah,
yes.
Has anyone ever brought? Has anyone ever brought you a gift that you were like annoyed, like genuinely annoyed?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's a great question. there was one I won't mention who or what the item was that was actually annoying.
Oh, okay.
like weirdly self-promotional.
Oh, yeah.
No.
But that was a long time ago. So, and then Jamie Lee, the comedian Jamie Lee, gave me a chewed up dog toy.
Yeah,
which she knew what she was doing, but that was the one gift that went immediately into the garbage.
Dude, the people, coming on the podcast, because I feel like that when I give a gift, especially if I'm just randomly giving a gift, it's to someone I know very well. So I know what I would be giving them. Whereas a stranger, it's harder to get a gift for. So like when people come on your podcast and maybe you don't know each other, I mean, the gifts, I would guess they're weird because they don't, they don't know you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's like a mix of my friends in comedy and then just truly strangers. And so occasionally, if it's a stranger, that a lot of the helpful gifts have come from strangers where they're like, I knew that maybe it would be something funny, but why not give you something you're actually going to use?
Yeah.
What did Paul Rubens give you? Pee-wee.
He gave me a bag. He basically cleared out his junk drawer. There were probably 40 items in the bag from like used up batteries to expired candy.
Oh, that's right on brand. Yeah.
That's disappointing because he actually has money. Like that would
right. If you've got money.
When I get a gift from someone who I know is fucking loaded and it's nothing, or if they're stingy in the bill and they're like doing pennies and cents to the tip, and I'm like,
it is a little surprising.
I know you got $1 million in the bank. Fuck you. You're paying for Cheesecake Factory right now, bitch.
Yeah, for real. Wait, and not to be so literal, because obviously your podcast is about your charm and how funny and the rapport you have with your guests. But like, I do want to ask one more question about gift giving. Has receiving so many gifts given you like a better idea of like what you want to give people when you do give gifts?
I actually feel like I've gotten way, way worse at giving gifts.
Oh, really?
I'm now overthinking it. And I also think that like the pandemic, truly like not seeing people or like celebrating things for a couple of years just has made it more difficult to buy gifts. Like the joy feels like it's been taken away. My niece's birthday is this week, and usually it would be a wonderful and exciting thing. I'd be like, oh, I'll send her all these things, and I'm dreading every moment of it. It's anxiety inducing.
Sorry, go ahead, Alan.
No, you started the podcast like right as the band, well, really just right before the pandemic started, and then most of the episodes of the podcast have come since the pandemic. What was it like? Sort of, how did you even coordinate getting gifts with your guests during the pandemic when you couldn't record together? I mean, I guess Amazon, but still, that's like not as personal.
I mean, it's already such an inconvenience for the guest. I mean, just under normal circumstances, this podcast is a huge hassle for the guest. Yeah. And so then you add in like, oh, here's my address. You have to send it to me, or can you drive it to me? I mean, I've driven to multiple houses to pick up gifts.
Okay.
But you'll go on a podcast and they'll be like, try to think of a topic to talk about. That's a huge problem. Mm-hmm. Bring me a gift. I feel bad.
I'm looking around, like I got this Angeline promo Polaroid. This is a fantastic gift for somebody. And that's like, you know what I mean? Like that's the, I don't know.
That's
a great piece of promo.
I know, right? They gave really good promo out.
I know. Where is that budget coming from?
Clearly not in the ratings of the show.
I have found personally that useful gifts have become more valuable than like luxurious gifts. Not that I have been given many luxurious gifts, but the usefulness of a bagu.
Wait, what?
Bagu.
What's a bagu?
Bagu is a brand of bag. Like this. It's a type of bag that is sturdy, somewhat fashionable, I guess you would say.
Sure.
I also have that sort of lesbian utilitarian vibe when it comes to the things that I like to wear and carry around, but usefulness has come in really handily with gifts versus anything that's meant to be like luxurious. That all being said, H. Allen got me a box of Crackle and Oat Bran for my birthday last year, and I'm still eating it.
Eating it? That says a lot about how bad Cracklin Oat Bran is, if the fact that it still tastes good a year later. It tastes just as good stale.
Son of Alan is such a weird about Cracklin Oat Bran, which is literally like the most delicious cereal in the world, and he's like insistent it's the worst. Anyway,
Bridger,
it's
I do want to ask
excellent texture.
It's, yeah. Okay,
it is
good.
Texture. Thank you.
Thank you. The texture is literally like
oak. Tastes like you're eating chalk.
You would give a horse, but regardless.
Who doesn't want to feel like a horse on occasion?
That's right. So you're named Blue after point. A guy that stop talking. You're named after a guy who discovered the Great Salt Lake. So do you have connections to Utah or Mormonism at all?
I do. I was raised outside of Salt Lake City as my family's Mormon. My parents are still practicing, and then the rest of the family is scattershot.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Right.
How about you?
Yeah, right.
Oh, what right about me? Yeah, yeah, I'm so sorry.
It's you're like, a full-blown Mormon.
I'm actually here today. I don't know if you guys have heard about a book called The Book of Mormon, or if you ever wonder about where we go when we die. But if we could just take a couple hours aside, I'm happy to talk about it with you.
H. Allen was grew up Mormon as well.
That's right.
Yes.
And I was going to say, defected. No, I was going to say defecated, but yeah, I actually meant to say defected and caught myself in time.
No, I was raised Mormon. And then the whole, you know, fag thing didn't work out so well with the Mormon.
Yeah, that gets in the way.
But I got up to the baptism and the whole start of the mission stuff, like the class things. And then I left.
Did you go on a mission?
No. I was gone because I basically left when I was 18.
Oh,
is it true?
Wait,
that...
did you go on a mission?
I did.
Where'd you go?
I went to Singapore and Malaysia. I didn't go for the full time. I left early.
Did you have? Because I know when I was sort of in that process of getting ready for all of that, that I was trying to plant every seed so that I could be placed in Germany, thus go to Berlin and sit on 12 dicks. And that's all I wanted to do. Now, did you, because, but I also Berlin. Learned that my family was super, I realized that that mattered in the Mormon community, but my family was super, super poor, had zero connections in the Mormon church, like no pull at all to get you placed in the places that you want to go. And was yours random or did you want to be going to that part of the world?
No, at that point would have loved to go to Japan, but I didn't express that in any way. Okay. But I ended up in Asia. So it was like, some level, it seemed exciting to go.
Brigham Young was hearing your thoughts and wanted to go to that part of the world.
Right. He appeared above my bed one night. Sending you to Southeast Asia.
Is it real that like you're supposed to end up on like your own planet?
Oh,
Celestial kingdom.
Create your own planet.
Yeah, because that's like you when you get married in a Mormon temple, you're sealed. Is that the word? Yeah, you're sealed with your family, and so that family is with you in Mormon heaven. Like you're with those people in Mormon heaven, and then there's tiers to like Mormon heaven. Now I haven't studied this in a long time, so I may be saying some things that are wrong, but there are tiers, and yeah, it's a whole thing.
That is nuts. Religion is fucking nuts, man.
No, it's very normal, and that's what I want to talk to you guys about. Man, I'm noticing some ignorance here, and I'm happy to leave the podcast if we're not going to take this seriously. So,
you know, that's how you can tell you're no longer Mormon, because a good Mormon would never leave. They would stay until their door shuts on them, and then they're like, I guess I could go. I'll get back on my bike.
So why did you leave your thing earlier? What do you call it again?
The mission.
Mission.
I had a like a full nervous breakdown. A real serious nervous breakdown, which I guess it should not come as a surprise. I wasn't like sold on the religion that much. Yeah. I was like struggling with my sexuality. I was on a bike 9 hours a day in like 100 degree heat.
Oh, it's my like God.
A terrible experience for someone who doesn't really believe in the thing they're selling in the first place. Yeah. So.
That sounds terrible.
So like, I mean, I know with my family, missionaries still come to my mom's house and they, I think it's because I'm like, I wouldn't say I'm prominent, but like I have a name and so, but they want to talk to my mom about me and like trying to woo me back, I guess, or something. I don't know what it is. And do you have this, like, does your family still get like missionaries coming to your house to talk to them about you?
Question. I don't think so. I had, when I moved to LA, my mom gave, and God bless her, I love my mom, but she gave the church my address in LA. Oh, and so I was getting like missionaries coming to my house and they would bring me candy bars and stuff. And I know how awful it is. Excuse me. So like I was nice to them, but eventually I like managed to escape all of that because it is annoying. Wait,
could there have been a moment where like you get a knock on the door, you open the door, you take the candy bar and then you close the door in their face? Like, could you just do that?
That would have been nice. That would have been a real.
That's how you receive a gift, Bridger.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Fuck off.
When I first moved to this apartment in Los Angeles, the old tenant, I guess, was Mormon or had a connection to Mormon because two female missionaries, which the old tenant was female. So that probably tells me why it was two women coming to the door. Sure. But I answered saying, oh, no, she doesn't live here anymore. And then they asked if I would be interested in anything. And I was like, I think I should just give you my name and you'll find out why I'm not interested.
Yeah, right.
They haven't come back since.
I am in a movie about leaving the church. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Oh, the worst. Well, Bridger, I do want to ask you. So like on the podcast, has there ever been a moment where sometimes a gift has turned tense? Like that like your reaction to a gift wasn't necessarily what the guest wanted from you?
That has not happened, but that is a constant fear of mine.
Is it?
Someone's going to, or like, I mean, I do feel like I've set myself up in a way for like, maybe I like we book a guest who secretly hates me and then they bring on something that's going to be like an uncomfortable conversation or something.
How great would that be though? That would be such a good episode.
I mean, it would be exciting.
Yeah.
It would be so exciting.
Come on, Bridger. You have to do that. Book your nemesis.
That's actually not a bad point. I might have to second Alan for the first time.
Okay, well, maybe I'll consider it. I mean, there was one guest who I specifically said, do not book that person ever. Oh. I do not want them on the podcast.
We have a few.
Maybe I open that door.
We have a few. We each get one.
as if we even have a booker. We do it ourselves, but.
do you also get recognized for how unique your voice is?
People talk about that, and it's an odd thing to me because I,
of course,
am used to my voice and also really dislike it. So when people
compliment me on my voice, wonderful. It's so unique. You sound like old American, I guess.
I thought that was going to go in a different direction. I got really worried.
No, you have like a retro sound to the way you pronounce words. It's really lovely.
Well, that's very sweet. I don't, as far as I know, the rest of my family doesn't speak the way I do. I don't know where it came from.
As far as I know.
But I mean, obviously, having done the podcast now, people will say things about it on occasion. I still don't quite know what we're talking about, but that's fine.
That's okay. Well, Bridger, it's been a blast to have you. Where can people follow you online? And aside from listening to you, I said no gifts.
I mean, almost nowhere at this point, but okay. I run the I Said No Gifts Instagram, which is just I Said No Gifts on Instagram. And I kind of post to Bridger_W on Instagram as well, but it's very rare. Okay. I mean, these things are all complete poison. So
you're preaching to the choir. Yes.
Yeah, Brent hates social media, hates it.
My recent dream has to start fundraising for a truth campaign style nonprofit that warns the world about how evil social media can be.
Like truth, right? Like the social media app?
Like So, like the smoking truth. It's like actually funded by big tobacco. And it's basically just awareness about what this is doing to your body. That's what I want to do with social media.
Someone would say that to me about cookies.
Bridger, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to
chat
with you.
Thank you for having me. It was so nice being here.
And another
thing. So recently, Brent has been texting me for updates, live updates on what I'm eating for dinner and when. because I guess he thinks it's very odd that I eat, not odd, but unusual, that I tend to eat dinner at a later hour.
Well, at 9 o'clock.
Sometimes at 9 o'clock. sometimes at 9 o'clock. Yeah. And again, it's not on a clock, and it's definitely fully prepared. But he thinks
wait,
it's
wait, 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 wait. Let me give a little more background. It's not exclusively that Elliot eats later in the night. I know some people eat later in the night. It's a combination of factors. It is that Elliot is so neutral on savory foods compared to his love for desserts. Yeah. I will text him consistently at 7:30, 8 o'clock, what's for dinner? And he will write back, I have no idea. I'm like, I ate hours ago. And you don't even know what you're having.
I feel like I'm like Elliot in this situation.
Fascinating.
I feel like I'm exactly like Elliot.
Do you eat? You eat at like 9 o'clock?
I do eat oft. Sometimes I would say often, very late. And if you had texted me at 7 o'clock, if you had texted me at 7 o'clock and asked me what I was eating for dinner, I'd be like, I don't know yet. I'm not there yet. I'm working. Yeah,
I guess.
I need to know Brent's standard. Yeah. What
are you eating at 4 o'clock?
I do. So one of the curses of my childhood, and I talk about this frequently, and it's not very interesting, but I'm going to share it nonetheless, is that my family always ate dinner together, no matter what. Like literally, there were 5 exceptions in my life until I turned 18. We always had dinner together. So it's been beaten into me that 6 o'clock. Is when you eat dinner.
Oh,
and
wow.
I could be in the middle of something. I could be working in particular, doing like a creative endeavor where like you get easily distracted. It's like 4 o'clock and I'll be like at a coffee shop and I'm like, I have to leave right now because I have to get home and get ready for dinner at 6 o'clock. Sharp.
Do you schedule dinner? We don't schedule dinners with other people at 6 o'clock as well.
Yeah, we don't eat dinner at 6:30. We go out.
We go out really late, and it's annoying to me. But like, I mean, look, I can hang. I mean, it's not like I'm not like appalled to eat at 8 o'clock. But if given my if I have my druthers, I will eat at 6:30 when I'm.
Oh, see, 7 o'clock is the 7 o'clock to me is the normal hour to eat. Like as an adult,
that to me is the earliest.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the earliest for me to eat dinner, too. When I was a kid, I was a lot like Brent, but it was because my dad was like, you know, he worked as a maintenance man. So he like would have to work at night sometimes. So sometimes we'd eat dinner at like 5-6 o'clock so that then Charlie could go back to work. That's my stepdad. Mm-hmm. But now Michael and I pretty much like, you know, I finish what I'm doing. I might get home from like a hike or something at like 5-6ish.
Yeah.
I'll like get ready, sort of watch some TV. And then like maybe around 7, we'll start the conversation about dinner. But like,
yeah,
we won't.
The air fryer. You warm up the air fryer.
If we're cooking at home, we'll do the air fryer thing. Or though sometimes we'll go out. But I will say there are certain dinners that I have to be like, I can't eat that after 9 o'clock because I'll be up all night. I'll have the worst heartburn. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. So, yeah. I also, go ahead, Brent. Sorry.
I was going to say, Elliot, I'm sorry. You can now pose the question. I've given enough context.
Well, I guess my question was, is it weirder to do what I do, which is to eat dinner later and not potentially plan it ahead of time? Or is it weirder to do what Brent does, occasionally work out wearing jeans at the gym?
Yeah, I need to ask you, Brent, because I dropped you off to the gym recently, and I forget where we were coming from, but I dropped you off at the gym, and you were in jeans. Did you work out in jeans?
I was in jeans, Alan, but I also had a gym bag with me with some pants in it.
I was wondering what was in the gym bag, but I didn't ask you. So I was thinking, like, well, he's working out in jeans.
Guys, in case you aren't a regular listener of the podcast, Alan and I had a genuine argument. Alan genuinely berated me like 6, 8, 10 weeks ago when we had a discussion about the fact that I will sometimes wear jeans at the gym, and Alan finds it appalling.
It is strange to me. It's very strange.
And literally, I bought pants. I bought like workout pants. And the one time I forgot, I jokingly sent Elliot and Alan a picture of me in jeans at the gym, and Alan like proceeded to berate me again for like 2 minutes.
It's a strange
thing. I think you should be institutionalized.
What's funny is that people were, that when you had that picture on a on a dating app, yeah, you got several comments, people being like, what are you like, strangers?
Constantly.
What are you doing? Are you wearing jeans?
How dare you? Yeah, no, I'm constantly getting comments.
I always, whenever I see it, I think it's like because somebody forgot their yeah, pants.
Same,
that's what I tend to think. That because just because jeans have so little give,
yeah,
that it seems like an uncomfortable material to work out in. Yeah, you do. But I guess Alan is really the tiebreaker here. Is it weird? Well, we already know the answer if he thinks it's weird.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is more of a question for listeners. Like, what do you think is stranger? And I have a feeling the listeners are going to leave it in the comments, please. Tell us, what do you think
is stranger?
Wearing jeans to the no, because it has to live forever. A poll will disappear in 24 hours.
I want
it in the comments to live. Do you wear, is it weirder to wear jeans to the gym or to eat dinner at 9 o'clock at night?
I'm literally going to start making 8 fake Instagram profiles so I can skew the results towards what I want them to be.
Jeans lover 2.3.
To be fair, the addendum to Brent's argument is that when I eat dinner, I'm eating like handfuls of nuts because I'm like not, I don't care about food that isn't sweet. Yeah. And honestly, he's really not far off. So part of that addendum is very true that right. I'm basically eating but... like a protein and then like a crudité.
But there have been a number of times where, like, Elliot and I will be out at something or like something will happen or it'll just be random where it's like, hey, it's 9 o'clock at night. Do you want to go to this diner or something? And I will always say yes, because to me, that's very normal. That's very New York to me that I would, you know, eat after a show or I'd eat after a, you know.
Well, again, let's be exact here. Let's be precise. I didn't say in the rolling plans of an evening, it's crazy to eat dinner at 9 o'clock.
Right.
I think it's atypical for someone when left to their own devices to default to eating at 9 o'clock every night. That's my experience.
You eat at 9 o'clock every single night, Elliot?
Not every night. No, but most nights genuinely 9 o'clock, yeah. And I will say that to Brent's point, both when I've worked on shows where they order dinner, I never order because they order at 6 o'clock and I'm like, I'm not eating at 6 o'clock. And then on top of that, fights break out with me and my family now because my parents want to eat, they've grown to eat a little bit later. They'll, you know, now they're super social in their retirement community. Mm-hmm. They're eating around 7.
Yeah.
But, you know, but they are very compulsive. But usually, I mean, we have to fight to not eat at 6 o'clock because I can't do it. It feels like a senior citizen move.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's show?
I'm in bed by the time Elliot eats dinner.
That's funny because my Aunt Joanne would say, tell Brent he can join me for an early bird dinner anytime.
Early bird dinner.
Yeah. Well, if you can do 6, you can do 4.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
you can
right.
definitely do 4.
Now, what about Aunt Ann?
My Aunt Ann would say, if you all don't go out and register to vote, I'm going to go through the Instagram and send each and every one of you the dirtiest naked picture.
There you go.
Register to vote.
That's almost
register.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. I guess we're going back to our traditional sign off.
Oh, wait.
I was going to say, I thought we don't say thanks anymore.
Yeah,
I thought
it just, say, just
well,
pure silence and nothingness.
But we do need to tell them.
I thought you guys wanted to go back, but I did want to. Yeah, I want to add the addendum that we'll be taking the next week off for the America's birthday. We will be back on July 14th with a new episode. So enjoy your 4th of July.
I will be out of the country because I don't feel very independent after this Supreme Court decision.
Yeah,
fair.
Bye, everyone.